Bobby Womack, All Along the Watchtower. He passed away over the weekend. We lost a great one. Now we're with Leah Tarachansky, who is the Israel-Palestine correspondent for the Real News Network, a filmmaker whose current project is called On the Side of the Road. Leah, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks so much.
Always good to have you with us. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Leah, I want to start this way. I've been following your reports religiously, as I always do. No pun intended, but I do.
I won't take offense to that.
Thank you. We've seen what has gone on only from the establishment press in terms of these three Israeli kids who have gone missing. But what the Israeli campaign has been in the occupied territories, in the West Bank, in Palestine itself. Could you talk what we're not seeing?
Yes. So it's so frustrating, I have to tell you, Mark, because, you know, you're in the West Bank and you're watching, you know, the biggest operation that we've seen, military operations since the Second Intifada, and the first time that the Israeli army is invading Ramallah in 7 years. And it doesn't appear at all in the press. When I'm saying the biggest operation, I'm talking about more than 500 people were arrested in the span of 1 week. I'm talking about more than 2,000 homes were broken into by the army and searched. And by searched, I mean everything inside was broken, and anyone who they suspect of anything was beaten severely. Not even taken to jail, but just beaten on the spot. There's been 8 people killed in various incidents across the West Bank, and we don't even see it really in the Israeli press, let alone in the foreign press, and in Israel. At the very least, you know, sometimes these things do get covered. There's a huge spread of military violence throughout the West Bank, which you don't see. Another thing that you don't see a lot in the established press is that since the first day of the kidnapping, of the supposed kidnapping, the Israeli army started bombing Gaza. Now, the West Bank and Gaza are separated, but the prime minister came out in a campaign that this is the work of Hamas. Now, he hasn't, unlike in every other similar case, presented the press with any evidence that this is Hamas. He hasn't identified individuals until this weekend that they specifically are pinning this on, and they haven't illustrated in any way how this could have been pulled out. So this raised a lot of questions amongst journalists who've been here for a while, who are used to the army laying out at least their version of what they believe is the step-by-step of what took place. You know, oftentimes, even in those cases, the things that they put forward are not true. And we've broken a lot of those stories. But at the very least, they proposed something. Here they proposed nothing, and they went and bombed Gaza. Now, this is significant because the Gaza Strip is under the rule of Hamas party, more or less. Fatah and Hamas, the two rivaling Palestinian parties, have reached unity just about a month ago. And so hopefully in the supposed upcoming election, there would be fair elections in Gaza as well. But at the moment, they bombed Gaza only to punish the Hamas party. And so we're seeing here a huge show of force by the Israeli government that's basically saying, you know, we are here, we are the rulers of the land, and we can do whatever we want, and we can take whoever we want, we can arrest them. And the worst part of it is that of the 500 people who were arrested, more than 100 administrative detention orders have been issued against them. Now, administrative detention is a draconian order that we have inherited from the British Empire, that allows us, in Israel, to hold anyone in jail for indefinitely, more or less, without any trial, any charge, or any evidence.
And I think that this, clearly, I'm glad you're laying this out, because this is what we're not seeing anywhere. And I think that this clearly seems to be from everything I've seen you reporting in a couple of other places, the effort here is just to really crush Hamas as much, if not more, than find these three kids because of the agreement made between Hamas and Fatah. And we have to remember that it was the Israeli government with American complicity that overthrew the Hamas government in the West Bank to start with that was duly elected by the Palestinian people.
Yeah, so I think we have to really, I'm really glad that you brought this up. We really have to sort of start looking at why is that, that the press and the government, and now also the society, joining this huge campaign to punish the Hamas party, and no one is talking about the legitimacy of doing something like that. You know, since the unity agreement between Fatah and Hamas, the Israeli government, especially the prime minister, suffered, you know, the latest in a very long series of political embarrassments. And so for him, a unity between two rivaling nations, the rival of which he can point to and say, you see, even the Palestinians don't have legitimate leadership that can represent everyone. Now that they're united, and democratically so, for the first time since the 2006 elections, he's left with nothing. So he had to break this unity, and this has been a very useful way in which he's done it. Because, of course, the American pressure on Mahmoud Abbas was so strong that he had to go and publicly condemn the supposed kidnappings. Hamas, on the other hand, never said that they did this thing. In fact, many of their ministers have said that doing a kidnapping at this particular moment is very counterproductive to their political program of rejoining, you know, the Palestinian Authority. Still, of course, they didn't condemn it because they are a party that never gave up the Palestinians' right to resistance and armed resistance as well. Now, the one party said, you know, this is atrocious. The other party said, you know, we're not saying we did it, but whoever did it, you know, good on you for continuing to resist the occupation. And since then, the Israeli military has been targeting Hamas party members, ministers, arresting, breaking and killing, breaking into people's homes and killing anyone who is associated with the Hamas party. And of course, the Fatah party, which is the party in the Palestinian Authority, has not condemned that. You know, at one point, Mahmoud Abbas said that the Israeli army's, you know, a show of force is really not helpful. But they haven't in any way tried to go in public and actually condemn it. On the contrary, the Palestinian Authority, every single day of this operation, has been coordinating and collaborating with the Israeli army and helping the Israeli army in their operations, which, of course, leads me to the most important point, that this operation has shown one thing, that the next intifada, if it takes place, will be against the Palestinian Authority. Every place I went throughout the West Bank, all I saw was Palestinians enraged against the Palestinian Authority, which, by the way, the U.S. created. And I also want to make another point. The reason that Hamas exists in the first place is because the Fatah party got so corrupt under Israeli and American you know, manipulations over the years, and of course their own manipulations. But the Hamas party arose out of that political vacuum. Since then, Israel has done everything in its power just to strengthen Hamas under the guise of weakening it, because it's given again and again and again a reason why diplomacy leads to nothing. And so people, the Palestinian people, are frustrated. They have just lived 66 years of occupation. Once in the 40 in the inside of Israel and for 46 years in the occupied territories. They don't believe that diplomacy can work anymore, and we've seen that the 20 some odd years of negotiations have led to absolutely nothing for the Palestinians, and in fact they've only seen the number of settlers on their territory triple and then quadruple, and more settlements building and more land being stolen and more water and resources being taken from under their feet with zero representation in the world. So, of course, all of this is doing is throwing them in the hands of Hamas. So now that this supposed kidnapping took place, we're going out in a huge campaign against the Hamas party. Well, this party is strong only because of what of the political situation that we've created.
So, I mean, it's a very complex and dire picture you paint as well, Leah, in all of this. I mean, if you, I was looking at, you know, some of your other reports that were really kind of very telling what's happening within the borders of the of Israel proper, traditional Israel, which when you wrote the stories on produced the stories about the land and who owns the land and what's happening to Palestinian Israelis, Arab Israelis, Christians and Muslims who have very less and less rights to the land they even live on.
Yes.
Talk a bit about that, because I think anybody's heard that at all either.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the complexity of this conflict, you know, it's the same as any other conflict. And I think that the reason the world pays so much attention to this particular one is because of the Holocaust, and it's because of all of the American investment in this little piece of land. But in the end of the day, like almost every other conflict, bloody conflict, it's about land. It's about people's rights of freedom and land. And right now, who owns the land, 93% of it officially, 96% in other ways, is the Israeli government and the Jewish people. And so the Palestinians, who are 50% of the population that live here, own about 3% of the land. And that's only in the territory that is called Israel proper. In the West Bank, you can own land. You can have papers from the British and the Ottoman Empire and even from the Israelis, and you could still have that land taken from you any moment by either settlers or the military or the electricity company or the roads company. And so over the years, since 1948, when the state was created, Professor Oren Yeftachel of the Ben-Gurion University calls, there has been a profound Judaization of the land. And today, almost all of the land is owned by the government of Israel, which is, of course, utilizes it for the benefit of the Jewish people only, and the Jewish National Fund, which explicitly, through its mandate, controls its land only for the benefit of the Jewish people. And so when the Palestinians are looking at that, and they're seeing that every year they're losing land, of course, this is very frustrating. And we're seeing also laws that are infringing not only on their land, but also on their freedom with every year. And this is not even Palestinians under occupation. These are Palestinians who are citizens of Israel.
I mean, and you also told the story about what happened to the Bedouins in the Negev being pushed off their land that, I mean, Israel often sometimes uses even the Ottoman law for itself. And the Bedouins have said under Ottoman law, this has been their land forever, but being pushed off that land so they can build a new settlement in the Negev, which is the area at the very bottom of Israel proper.
Yeah. I mean, I think that to say it as simply as possible, you know, Israel as a country doesn't have a constitution. Now, we don't have a constitution not by accident. We don't have a constitution on purpose. This was a very heated debate in the very early years of the state. But eventually, David Ben-Gurion, who's our first prime minister, decided against it. With the advice of a few rabbis and his political advisors, they decided not to have a constitution for one very simple reason. If they have a constitution, would have to define what is a Jewish person. Because if you have Israel, the country for the Jewish people, you need to define what the Jewish people are. And that is something we inside of the Jewish community can't agree on, because we have the Orthodox stream, the Reform stream, the Sephardic streams, and of course between them, they don't see each other legitimate. So he saw that as too much of a headache, and so he said, okay, if we can't define who the Jewish people are, how are we going to find what the state is? And also, how do we create a state for the Jewish people and have all its citizens equal? We can't do that. So he decided against the Constitution. Since then, we've had a series of what we call basic laws. These are constitution-like laws. And some of them deal with the land. But the point here is that because we don't have a constitution, government lawyers can come to any issue and say, well, what is the law that we're going to use to determine in this issue? So at some points they say, well, let's use Israeli law. Some other points, when that's not convenient, they say, let's use British law, the empire that was here before Israel was even created. Others say, let's use Ottoman law. And so they use this hodgepodge legal system, especially in the West Bank today, but also in the 40s and 50s inside Israel, and in some cases, as you mentioned, with the Bedouin in the Negev Desert today, where they just glue together different laws that serve the purpose of taking as much land as possible.
Leah, I'm sorry I had to interrupt because I'm out of time, but I really appreciate you coming on the show here. We look forward to having you on more often because you open doors for people's minds here that don't get opened around this issue. Leah Tarachinsky is the Israel-Palestine correspondent for the Real News Network and is working on a new documentary project called On the Side of the Road that we're all looking forward to. Leah, thank you so much once again.
Thank you so much, Mark. And please check out our stories on therealnews.com.
We will do that for sure. And a link to that at steinershow.org. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our interns are Sam Saper, Sienna Greaves, and Alex Boston. To hear the show again, podcast any of our past shows, you can visit us on the web at steinershow.org, where we link to the work of all of our guests. We can also listen to and download all of our podcasts now on iTunes. For Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
The Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training Incorporated, MCVET, provides homeless veterans and other veterans in need with comprehensive services that will enable them to rejoin their communities as productive citizens. MCVET is located at 301 North High Street in Baltimore and accepts intake applications in person Monday through Friday and the fourth Saturday of each month. For additional information, 410-576-9626, extension 244, or mcvet.org.
Hello, this is Doc Manning, host of In the Tradition. Join me every Monday night from 8 p.m. to 12 midnight when jazz becomes the creative expression of human existence. Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
You know, the perfect way to close out your workday awaits you in the groove. Hi, this is Marcellus Shepard, the bass man, inviting you to share in a splendid mix of contemporary and straight-ahead jazz with the hint of neo-soul. And we preserve the classics weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. on the voice of the community, WEAA 88.9 FM.
Public Radio, 88.9 FM, the broadcast service of Morgan State University, WEAA, Baltimore.
It is Monday, June 30th. I'm Michelle Martin from NPR News. It's Tell Me More. You might know that NASA's innovative technologies often come down to Earth. Now NASA is giving you